We are going to talk about lock sport. Maybe, if I'm really lucky. Come on. There we go. All right, let me tell you who I am real quick. My name is Bill Senf. I am by trade. Wow, this thing is not real happy today. I'm going to have to use my space bar. I am by trade an enterprise architect, which means that I am half dev and half ops in the world of computer science. I'm a published author. One of my latest is C# 2010 for Dummies. I like Dummies books because you are what you read, and or what you write, maybe? Is it even better? Yeah. I'm a big fan of learning the basics. So I do a lot of work for that. Very much family guy. In fact, normally my family would be here. I bring them to these things and we have a lot of fun. I have a 5-year-old son who can pick locks better than I can and like that. We have a real good time together, but they've got some stuff going on, so they're stuck at home and I'm up here. So it's a little weird, but that's all right. I am actually a ninja. I train in Banzai Ninjutsu in Columbus, and I'm 5th Q, and don't test me because I've been spending more time doing my other main hobby, which is homebrewing. You can tell by looking at me. Anyway, I'm also a lock sport enthusiast, and that's kind of what brings me here today, and what brings me actually into this space in general. I'm being mostly in the dev space. I spend not as much time as I should historically looking at security. The lock picking has brought me closer to the security community, and I'm working my way into kind of being a bridge between the development world and the InfoSec world, at least in Ohio, because it needs to happen. But that's a topic for another talk, and we'll have that talk some other day. So I've been writing for quite a bit, and this slide has absolutely nothing to do with this presentation at all, but I like it because it has pictures of books that I forget about, and every time I look at it, I go, oh yeah, I did write that Windows Services book back in the day. So, but it's worth looking at. More importantly is how I got here, which is specifically of interest to this presentation. I learned how to pick locks at DEF CON 15 from DeviantOlam. Actually, the story goes more like my wife had gone with me to DEF CON 15, and I got a phone call sitting down in some talk about network security. They have a lockpick village here. What the hell is a lockpick village? It's this awesome place with all these locks, and they teach you to pick them. This is my wife calling, right? I'm going, all right, what are you doing? I'm sitting here, you've got to come up here. I'm sitting here at this table, and I'm learning from this guy, and he's got a presentation, and it's awesome. It's like, all right, well, I'll be up there eventually. I was kind of nonplussed. Okay, lock picking school, whatever. But, and I go up there, and like 4 hours later, 5 hours later, I go up, and she's still sitting at the table at the same place. And there's a half-empty bottle of Jack Daniels between her and DeviantOlam. And there's all these guys up surrounding her and sitting at the other seats of the table, and she is sitting directly in front of Dio. And so this little bit of a thing, blonde chick, is sitting amongst, well, all you, basically. I mean, a bunch of white guys. It was pretty amusing space. Anyway, so I got wrangled myself in there and got taught and found out that I kind of have a thing for it, and I'm kind of a gadget trivia freak anyway, so it worked out real well for me. I came back to Columbus and thought, wow, this is awesome. This fits in really well with my martial art because we have a stealth entering requirement as part of our belt tests. We learn how to walk certain ways and move certain things and get in places we're not supposed to. And lockpicking would be an awesome thing to add to that, just in a general scope of security. So I started the Columbus chapter of Locksport International. So I had 10 or 15 guys. We'd come over to the house, we'd sit and drink beer and pick locks, and it was a real good time. Well, that went on for a couple years, and I went back to DEF CON 17 and met Doug Farr. And Doug Farr had become, since then, the president of Locksport International out of Texas and was kind of starting to rebuild it. So we got talking about building organizations and building teams and stuff like that. And lo and behold, he needed a whipping boy. So like 3 days after 3 days after DEF CON, I get a text message saying, hey, I'm promoting you to the administrative director of Locksport International. That's awesome. What the hell does that mean? So I called him and tried to figure out what it means. What it basically means is that everything that Doug doesn't feel like doing, Bill gets to do, which is just a wonderful place to be. Anyway, eventually the Luxport group kind of grew out of my house, and we moved to this wonderful hackerspace in Columbus called the Columbus Idea Founder. It's very similar to the Makers Alliance in Cleveland. They have it's a little bit more arc-y and a little bit less electronic-y maybe, but they have a phenomenal selection of every kind of tool you would ever want, including a 4-ton Bridgeport CNC that isn't quite working yet, but I guarantee it'll be making lock cutaways in no time at all. Anyway, and that's that kind of got me here. The experience of coming in from the dev side, learning a little bit about InfoSec and a lot about lockpicking, and then ending up thrust in the middle of this international organization that has hundreds of members all sitting around and picking locks for fun, as it turns out, makes for kind of an interesting story. So I've been telling the story informally on and off for quite a while now. I thought I may as well make a presentation out of it and tell it formally a couple times and maybe teach a little bit of lockpicking and stuff too. So the number one question that I get from anyone who finds out that I pick locks, strangely enough, is Locksport? Why Locksport? Does lock picking sound too much like nose picking? Why do you call it Locksport? And that's kind of gone back and forth. I mean, ostensibly, it's because we compete. But does that really make it a sport? I don't know. It's a question that's been bugging me on and off for a really long time. And so it kind of is the premise behind this presentation and these set of stories is this really a sport? What are we doing? What are we doing learning how to pick locks and sitting around drinking beer and picking practice locks and stuff? What is it we're doing? Well, in figuring that out, I've gotten to talk to a lot of people, and I've discovered that there basically are four kinds of people that want to talk about lock sport. And everyone has their own thought about it. Opinions are like, well, they're like navels. I know they're like other things, but this is a family show, and we're being recorded and stuff. So anyway, everyone has an opinion, right? So the first one I get is, lock what? You do what? You can't pick locks. That's just something you do in the movies. I can't even believe it. And that you'd be surprised how many people think that I'm lying. It's not even possible. I mean, if you could pick a lock, that would mean people could break into things. That would be horrible. Anyway, so that's one group of people. I guess those press the space bar there. Yes, they call them the incredulous. The belligerent is the second kind. Picking locks is for criminals. You're just training the next generation of burglars here. You scumbag. Yeah, okay, well, not really. But a large part of the research in the talk went into that, and I've got some really interesting parables, I guess, about the realities of lock sport and the realities of burglary that are kind of interesting. There are the security snobs who are horribly incensed that I have reduced their sacred art of security to a game. And that's always an interesting conversation, let's put it that way. And then there's the cool kids, the guys who get it, the kids who get it, people who get it, that say, oh yeah, dude, this is fun. Forget about the security implications. It's just a really neat puzzle. So I went through each of those four people and did a little bit of breakdown of where they came from and where they're going to, and I'd like to share it with you. We'll start with the incredulous. So the key of the incredulous is they think that lockpicking is something that James Bond does. The key line here is you can't really open a lock without a key. I mean, what's the point of the key? It's so astonishing to me how many people simply do not know that it's even possible to open a lock without a key. You have to ask them, what do you think locksmiths do? Well, they replace locks. Well, yes, but wouldn't you need to get it open first? Well, damn, I never thought of it that way before. It's I don't know, it's really, try having these conversations yourself. It's really a lot of fun. So in contrary to being secret knowledge, I personally have taught well over 500 people to pick locks in the short time that I've been doing this. And there are probably people in this room who have that beaten by 2 times or 10 times even. Lockpick villages are everywhere now in every security conference, the regionals like this, the nationals. I am starting to do them at developers' conferences. For instance, StirTrek in Columbus. And I did another one called here in Cleveland, over at the indoor water park called Code Mash. And in January, and I did an open space there on lock picking, and it, the top 60 people, just, I mean, it's unbelievable. The people who, people want to learn forbidden knowledge, and they do a tremendous amount of it. So, what's the problem with these people who don't who are incredulous about this? As it turns out, they kind of have an altered perception of security. There is a large contingent of, and I think this is an important psychology lesson for people who are in InfoSec, because it applies on both sides. There's a large contingent of people that think putting a no trespassing sign on your fence will keep people out of your yard. I teach a class now, a lockpicking class at the Idea Foundry, and I was honored to have Joe Blundo, who is a columnist for the Dispatch, come and write a story about it, which I thought was just awesome. It was excellent. It turns out it was an incredibly awesome, very positive story. He even called the Columbus police, and they said, "We don't care if they teach lockpicking because nobody breaks into things by picking locks," which I talk about a lot later on, but that's neither here nor there. The point of the story from this perspective is that the photographer, who is this little waif of a girl who was an excellent photographer, who he brought with her to take a couple shots for the article, we got to talking, the three of us, and he asked the question, "Don't you worry that you're teaching the next generation of burglars?" And I gave my pat response, which is that nobody takes the time to pick locks. Burglarizing, it's just simply too slow. And this girl pipes up and says, "Well, no, my lock was picked, and my apartment was broken into." It's like, "Oh, it was? Really? Where at?" "Well, here in Columbus." "Wow, well, what makes you think that your lock was picked?" She's like, "Well, they didn't break a window or use a thing. They just, you know, they got in without leaving any obvious mark of entry." "Oh, wow. Could you have maybe left the door open?" "No, I'm not from the Midwest. I don't make mistakes like that." I'm thinking, so it's more likely that somebody stood in front of your apartment complex for 15 minutes to pick best SFIC and then got into your apartment, stole your stuff, and left, than it is that you maybe by some weird fluke forgot to lock your front door that one time. But that's the way people think. "Oh, it's got a lock. It's okay because it's got a lock." The minute you tell them that having a lock does not make it okay, they get rather upset. So let's start with the basics. Let's talk a little bit about the basics of lock picking. Has everybody here picked? I'm talking to a group of people who already know all this stuff, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. So you just get the, you never know. I listen to beginning lock pick demonstrations like once a month if I can, because you always pick up something different. So we'll go from it from there. So you all know that this is a pick. This is specifically a feeler. It is a used for single pin picking. This is not a pick. This is a tensioner. You need two tools to open a lock, which is something else that's very interesting from the people who believe that picking a lock is from the movies. Even if you use a bump key, which we'll talk about later, you still need some way to provide the bump. So generally speaking, picking a lock, you need two keys. You need two tools. So what are you going to move with your two tools? Well, these are all, if you guys have seen Devin Olam's presentation on lock picking at DEF CON or any one of the thousands of places he goes, most of my animations are used from his presentation. He knows I'm using them. So, this is what you see if you look at the front of a lock, right? And if you don't know what's going on inside of there, I can imagine why you would think sometimes that locks are some kind of weird magic and the key somehow wiggles its things around and oh, wow, it opened. I don't know how it did that. Because you're not getting to see very much here. But the fact is that if we have X-ray lock vision, we can see that we have some pieces here. And the pieces do important stuff. The bottom pin is called the key pin. That is the thing that the key moves. It is slanted in such a way so that it fits into those little shoulders inside the lock. It doesn't fall through to the bottom into the keyway. The blue piece of metal above it is the binding pin. That is the pin that stops this part from rotating inside of this part. And above that is a spring that keeps everything in place. Otherwise, you could just turn the lock upside down, and things would fall over under the cylinder above. The main premise of a lock, let's see if I get lucky and make this thing work. No! Man. So, if you put a tensioner in and try to rotate, this line, which is called the shear line, will cause a binding action. And you can say, I don't know how easy it is to see out there, but we're rotating this, and this binding pin is binding these two pieces together because it can't get past the narrow angles provided by the cylinder here inside the lock. So that's more or less what we're trying to do, is we're trying to move that pin out of the way. The key will do that for us. That's what keys do. You put the key in, the key is cut in such a way that it moves the pin just high enough so that the binding pin is above the shear line. You do not have to use a key to move that binding pin. You can use a pick, which I should probably have in my hand, but you know what I mean. So, what we're doing is we're exploiting the lock. Just like in pen testing, you are exploiting certain flaws in a security system. In lock picking, you're exploiting certain flaws in the manufacturing of the lock. In a perfect world, these five pins and the shafts that they go into would be perfectly aligned, exactly the same distance apart, and exactly the same diameter. In reality, almost nothing is machined that well. It's just impossible. It's not impossible. It's extremely expensive, especially given the mid-class metals that locks are usually made out of. You always have something binding first. In this animation, we've turned the lock on its side. Here we're looking at it from the top. In this animation, we've turned the lock to its side, and we can see all five pins. When we put rotation on the inner cylinder, only one of the pins binds up. That is our attack vector. We are going to find that pin and lift it so that the binding pin is above the shear line. It looks like this. After we put our tensioner in, we can use our pick to reach in and feel for the spring action. If you can feel the spring action, that pin is not binding. If you cannot feel the spring action, then that pin is binding. Here we have found it. Oh yeah, we can feel it squeaking up there, squeaking up there, squeaking up there, click. That click is the lock moving to the next binding pin, right? The next closest hole in the lock to the side you're tensioning. We can find those one at a time. It does take a little bit of time, and it takes a significant amount of practice, but it's a fun puzzle if you're into such things. But that is the premise of what we're doing. We are doing the work of the key, one pin at a time, by exploiting a flaw in the manufacturing of the lock. Wow. Poking. All right. So, you can't pick a lock with one tool. You have to have a pick and a tensioner. This picture, unfortunately, is from a locksmith's website, where this guy is picking this lock with a pick and nothing else. So we won't even talk about where that came from. All right. So that's kind of the demonstration that I give to people that believe that locks can't be picked. Once you understand the logic of the situation, it suddenly becomes much, much easier to understand how the system can be exploited. Also, further down the line, it can be made much more easy to understand how you can beat lockpickers. But that's a subject for another talk. So, the second group of people that I have talked to over time about lock sport and the ideas behind lock sport are the belligerent. And these are the people that think that I'm training everybody to be a burglar, and when somebody breaks into the house, they're going to sue me, goddammit, because I'm teaching these people to be burglars and get off my lawn, kid. Yeah, okay. I'm not really so sure about that. You see, people, very similar to the Ohio law, and I don't want to bring politics into this, but there's an Ohio law that's being discussed right now, and whether or not they should even be discussing it is another matter that we can discuss at another time. But the fact is that they're working on making it legal for people that have concealed carry permits to carry a gun into a bar. And of course, everybody's all up in arms about that because somebody's going to get in a bar fight, and instead of punching somebody, they're going to whip out their .44 and blow their brains out. And the argument against that is, you know, I doubt somebody is going to go spend $200 on a CCW class, go in, give their name and fingerprints to the Franklin County Sheriff, get a card, buy and register a gun just so they can carry it into a bar and shoot someone. If someone is going to carry a gun into a bar and shoot someone, they're not going to have a registered weapon and they're not going to have their CCW. They're going to be doing it against the law anyway. So does the law even need to be made? I don't know. But the fact is that people who are going to break the rules are going to break them anyway. Yeah?
Also, technically,
Yes.
It's sober, and the definition of a bar is a location with a Class D license, which means that they serve alcohol.
Yes, sir.
So technically, Applebee's would be considered a bar.
Absolutely, it would. And there is a provision of that law that says that you can only be carrying it if you are not drinking, which is also a provision of the CCW permit, at least in Franklin County. I'm not certain if they're the same statewide, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. Burglary. People are not going to go and take a lockpicking class to learn how to burgle houses. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Especially today, where you can get anything you want off the internet. I tell people all the time, we normally have a demo, but you can get the idea. My favorite lock to pick is the Master 140. It's just an awesome lock to pick. I recommend that it's a padlock, little brass number. It's easy to carry. It's a lot of fun. It has two security pins in it. If you Google Master 140, the 7 top links are videos of people picking them. And the 8th link is a link where you can actually buy one. You don't need to pay me $50 for a 3-hour class on LockSport in order to learn how to burgle somebody's house. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I forgot about this edition. So you might not be able to read this. This is probably a little too small. But Joe wrote this article, and of course it was on clubofdispatch.com. It still is there. If you go search for my name, you should be able to find it. I don't know. I think they've maybe closed their search down. That's only 7 days. But Alex Bandar, who runs the Columbus Idea Foundry, said, "Hey, great article. Glad Bill shared his passion for LockSport. So well represented. Anyone interested in taking his class or visiting?" It's an ad, right? He put an ad in the comments. "Come to the Columbus Idea Foundry," and blah, 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 blah. And then American Patriot says, "Publishing such information for the general public would seem to be a bad idea. Society should be protected from those who are inclined to be dishonest or tempted to become part of the criminal element who would use such information for illicit gain. Therefore, a registry should be maintained covering all who are trained in such techniques. Sorry that criminals tend to create situations for which all of us pay a penalty. Those on such registry need to have no fear as long as they do not use their knowledge illegally." So, that would be a good example of the belligerent. Fortunately, I don't personally know that guy. I attempted to actually go break into something. The most important thing to take here, however, is that criminals don't use picks. They don't use picks, okay? If somebody's gonna break into your house, they're gonna go to the back door and they're gonna use a crowbar, or they're gonna use a brick. I have a nice house out in the woods. My dad built this great house, and then he and his wife got old enough that they didn't want to maintain it anymore, so I bought it from him. It's beautiful, 3,700 square feet on 5 acres of Darby Park. It's gorgeous. We're out in the middle of nowhere, so I don't really worry about security as it is, but we have this nice big front door with the glass window, the round window on the top, and the things on the sides with the stuff and like that. And I have a bylock on my front door. I have my keys, but I'm not going to pass it around here. A bylock is a Australian lock. And the opening of it is shaped like a U, and the key has a rounded feel with two sets of pin cuts on each side. So it's 14 pins in this little teeny tiny U that comes across the corner. So I'll get you in just a second. I did see it. The interesting thing is that I have several Columbus police officers in the LockSport group, and one of them is a friend of mine. And after I installed it, of course, I'm showing it out to people. "Look at this cool ass lock that I have on my front door." Steve says, "Bill, you realize if somebody wanted to break into your house, they'd just break the glass and reach in." I was like, "Well, yeah, I know that. I have a cool lock on my front door because I'm a lock geek, not because I have any illusion of how secure it is. If somebody wants to break into my house, my entire back of the house is made of glass. I'm certain they could find a way in." But I like locks, so I've got a bylock on the front door, a CES lock on the back door, and I realize that somebody's going to use that if they want to steal something from me. Go.
We do have an example of that very lock up in the LockSport area upstairs.
Awesome.
Currently closed. Will be open as soon as this is over.
I'm glad you said that because I might have forgotten because I didn't put it in my notes. I won't be doing questions in the question room. I'm going to retire to the LockSport Village and sit around and there for a couple hours, and if anybody has any questions or just wants to shoot the shit about locks, I'll be there. So I'm glad you said something. Okay, so criminals don't use picks. As it turns out, most locks are incredibly difficult to pick. The locks that we use for practice locks, Mastery number 3 and 140 and 150, and the Schlage and Kwikset 5-pin deadbolt locks that we use for practice and competition most of the time, yes, those locks are extremely easy to pick. But just a moderate tick up in security makes the lock magnitudes more difficult to pick. The most common lock in Columbus, anyway, I assume probably in Cleveland too, for like businesses is the Best SFIC. You see them all the time. You look, they say Best right on them. That is a, I mean, so you can buy a Schlage slug, the core piece of the lock, for $8, right? A Best is like 15. All right, so you doubled the price of the lock. That went to a 7-pin master keyed lock that you can go try. I don't know if you have any upstairs. You can go try one, and you tell me what you think. Okay, there are people who can pick them. I have them in my lock library, and there are people who can pick them. And there are people who can pick them fairly fast, but I'll tell you what, they are few and far between, and try to do it with it mounted.
Try to do it with the soaker.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was just off 2 bottles of wine, and it took me like half an hour.
Yeah, that's exactly right, yes. And if you're actually trying to do it sober, and if you're going to burglarize someplace, I recommend doing it sober, you will find it even harder to pick. Most locks are very hard to pick. Nonetheless, even knowing all of this, I wanted to go get some statistics about non-destructive entry from the, I can't believe I didn't put the details in here. There's a registry, a crime registry, that one of the federal agencies keeps track of. If one of you guys are real big security people, you might know what I'm talking about, and if you do, shout out. But there's a registry of all crimes, how many occur, whether it's, you know, increase, decrease over time, stuff like that. So I went into burglary, and lo and behold, burglary is broken down into like eight different sections. I was like, awesome. Where's the picked locks? Aren't they going to tell me which of these are picked and not picked? And so if you can't read it, it's there's the front door and the window and the back door and the garage and the basement and just unlocked. Yeah, like our photographer. Storage area, second floor, which I misspelled, awesome. The interesting thing is that they don't track whether they were, how they were broken into. So I called. I called this place. They have an information number, so I called them and said, hey, I'm looking for statistics on non-destructive entry. And they said, what? I'm looking for statistics on non-destructive entry. People, burglaries committed by lock picking or slipping or something like that. We don't track that. Why not? Because it doesn't happen. Oh. Okay. So, for whatever that's worth. The fact is lock picking is just simply too slow to use for burglary. Even picking a basic lock, if you're nervous and in the dark and underdressed and the lock is mounted, you are not going to be able to pick open a lock faster than several minutes, probably. It certainly isn't worth the risk. So you are not going to use basic picking skills to pick a lock. Burglars, on average, spend 60 seconds attempting to gain entry to a property using a crowbar. They certainly are not going to sit for 5 minutes with a lock pick in the dark on a mounted lock. It's not going to happen, and it doesn't happen. Go.
They stole your TV. Do you really think they're going to care about your door?
Yes. And I've had people argue with me about that exact argument, which is, it's not that they want to, it's not they care about your door, just they don't want you to know they've been there, because good burglars don't steal your TV. Good burglars steal your postage stamps or your jewelry or the credit cards you leave in the bottom of your underwear drawer. Or, you see what I mean? That's what good burglars steal. They don't want you to know that they've been there. But even those people aren't going to take the time to pick the lock. They're going to steal a key. They're going to wait for a door that's unlocked. They're going to follow you into your house, whatever. That's how those people are going to get into your house. Yeah.
And how common are good burglars? In my neighborhood, the quality of crime is very low.
Yes. I understand completely.
They just beat the door down.
Yes, that's exactly what they do. Yeah. They kick the door in, yes.
How often do you hear of a well-executed burglary? Serious question.
I have a couple slides in here about that exact topic. I don't know when, but at some point here. So, if you need speed, there are other tools. There are tools that we do not teach, because they're no fun. Now, yes, you can go upstairs. I mean, I have a bump key on my key ring. All right? You can go upstairs and learn how to bump a lock. And that is arguably, now we're starting to tread on the territory of burglary. Because realistically, there is no sport in bumping a lock. There's very little skill to it. You don't learn anything about the lock doing it. All it does is destroy the lock, so you don't really want to practice on it. But if you've learned how to do it, you may be stepping over the line learning to bump locks. But the fact is that most of the time, if you go into a lockpick village, yes, everybody wants to learn to bump a lock once because they want to be able to say they can do it. Like I said, I carry a bump key. I've never used it, but I carry one because it's forbidden knowledge, and forbidden knowledge is cool. But those people who do choose to non-destructively enter facilities using some lock-picking technique are going to use a faster technique, like bumping the lock or slipping the lock. So let's take just a quick second and talk about bump keys, because I want to do a little bit of education. That's part of all this. bump keys are keys that have been cut to the lowest possible setting for the key. So that little key pin that I showed you has 9 possible heights by an ISO standard, actually. And you can take a key and cut it to the lowest possible setting and while leaving the bumps in place, and then cut the shoulder off of the key. And that is what a bump key is. The way it works, there are basically 2 methods. And one of them is called the pull method for a reason I do not understand. But more or less, you have pulled the key out of the lock a little bit. So you start with the key out of the lock a little bit, put a little tension on it, whack it with a hammer. I use the handle of a screwdriver, it's the best thing I found. And then you create chaos within the lock. Okay? You create a bunch of chaos. And over time, if you have the right amount of tension, you will get all of the bump pins, all of the binding pins, to move at the same time above the shear line, if you have put just the right amount of pop on it and you have just the right amount of tension. It is a remarkably easy way to open a lock if you have practiced it. I will grant that. So here I am telling you that we don't need to learn this for lock sport, but if we're going to talk about it, I want to at least talk about what it is. So the push method is even simpler, but it requires an alteration to the bump key. If you've cut the shoulder back, you can put the key in a normal amount. Okay, but the shoulder won't touch against those first couple pins, and you can just pop it from there. It requires a lot less movement, does a lot less damage to the lock. Go.
Also, if you cut the shoulder, you also want to cut the bottom shoulder.
Yes.
And most people don't end up doing that, and it ends up being very easy to notice when they do try to use a bump key on the lock.
Because there's a huge dent in the bottom of the lock.
Exactly.
Yes. And also, you have to cut the, believe it or not, it is called the nipple off the, sorry, it's supposed to be a family show, but it's true, the tip of the key off. It has to be removed. Otherwise, it will bounce against the back of most locks. Not all locks, but most locks. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So that's how a bump key works, real quick. If you want to play with one, I've got one, and like that. The most important thing to learn about a bump key is that you have to have the key. The key that I have this is a Kwikset key. Kwikset is about the cheapest, junkiest lock you can buy, and it probably is on your front door, unless you're in an apartment. What's that? Yes, they only have 3. They only have 3 of its sort. They only have 3. Kwikset only builds with 3 keyways, and 2 of them take the same key. I don't know why they're considered 2 different keyways, but they are. So if you want to open any Kwikset lock, you really only have to carry 2 bump keys. Realistically, most of them, at least in Ohio that I have seen, use 1 keyway. And that's the keyway that I have here. And I forget what the keyway is called off the top of my head, but I can look it up. However, once again, even just that one little step up, that next step up in quality of lock to go to like an SFIC, will give you a remarkably larger set of selections. This is a best key and the best keyways. And there's what? There's 11 of them. So already, if you want to get into a building that uses best keyways, you're going to have to carry 11 bump keys and make 11 bump keys, and then you have to try them all, unless you are good enough that you can look at the keyway and figure it out, which most people can't do. So that makes, if you are casing something, potentially, yes, you could maybe make a bump key, but honestly, if you're going to spend that much time doing it, there's got to be an easier way to get in than to roll the dice and attempt to pick the damn thing, right? You should probably be able to come up with some other way to get into the building if you're going to spend that much time. Lock slipping is the art of using something other than the lock to move the mechanical locking device holding in the binding path of the portal. Okay, so that's a bunch of giggly boop to say you move the deadbolt out of the way using something. Most people use a credit card, okay? Cheap locks, it's easy. You can just put the credit card in, wiggle it, it moves a little bit, wiggle it, wiggle it, wiggle it, wiggle it, wiggle it, wiggle it, comes open, done. Thank you very much. It is not terribly hard, and it's also not terribly interesting. It's not something that you do in a lock support group anyway, because it's boring as hell. But there are people who do it. The best one is David Niera. And David Niera is my favorite good burglar story. You wanted a good burglar story? Here's your good burglar story. On April 10th, 2008, okay, a 64-year-old male Caucasian by the name of David Niera entered a condominium complex illicitly using non-destructive entry by using a credit card to slip the perimeter ground gate lock and then proceeded to use that same credit card to slip the deadbolts of front doors, enter the premises and steal the jewelry and lock the door behind him as best he could. Not obviously if it's deadbolt, he's not going to be able to do that, but he could lock the handle at least. They picked him up after he was found on CCTV, and they just were watching places that he appeared to be casing, and eventually they caught him, right? In 2008, there were 19,204 burglaries in LA. Okay, now, remember I told you the federal numbers, they don't track non-destructive entry? Well, in LA, as it turns out, maybe all of California, they do track non-destructive entry. And 61 of those 19,204 burglaries used non-destructive entry. 61. That's such a small percentage, I can't even do the math quickly. I should probably do it and put it in my notes. In 2009, there were 18,786 burglaries in LA, and zero of them used lockpicking. The quote in the paper was, "In addition, since the arrest of David Niera, lockpick/slip lock residential burglaries have virtually ceased in West Los Angeles." Not virtually. They stopped. There was one person out of all the burglars in LA, which is half the population, using a lockpick technique to get in. One person in all of LA using a lockpick technique, and even he didn't have a hook and wasn't using single pin picking. So there's our good burglar story. Yeah, there. See, I was ready for you. I knew. Yes. Let's talk about security snobs for a minute, and don't take any of this personally, please. But it is a problem. Okay. So where this all came about, really, this whole lockpicking thing. The people that have been in the industry for a long time and maybe have like stopped doing community stuff because they've been in it for, I mean, I'm talking guys with 20, 30 years in security, InfoSec security, are all like, they all ask me, where did this lockpick thing come from? We never used to do this. I mean, some of them knew because of childhood misspent youth stuff, but not formalized like we do in the conferences now. Well, the CISSP has a physical security clause, a physical security section in it. And in order to understand physical security at some level, you have to understand how locks work. And the best way to understand how locks work is to open the damn things with a pick. I mean, it's just a fact. Knowing that things like those little wafer locks that you use to hold the jewelry cases closed are like not even as good as a handle for keeping things closed is important for somebody who is in charge of the physical security of their facility. So do you need to learn to pick to be a security pro or to pass your CISSP? No, you don't. But everyone did it anyway. Why? Because it's forbidden knowledge, and everybody likes forbidden knowledge. So everyone wants to learn to pick. Locksport Villages started turning up at all security conferences everywhere. When you think about the training for the CISSP, did I get the classroom picture in there? I didn't. Okay, well, forget I was going to say that for a moment. You get the nice classroom feel with all this stuff and somebody up here doing a presentation like this. But then you go into the back room and you get the world's smallest Lockport Village. We call this Lockport Tiki Hut. This was at Lockport Tiki Hut at B-Sides Cleveland here. When was it? February? Somebody set up some stuff there. So it's showing up everywhere. It's showing up everywhere, and that's why. It's because the security pros have kind of used the physical security clause in the CISSP to make it a cool thing to do. And there are legitimate users of lockpicking. Okay, that was supposed to go on its own. Sorry about that. Locksmiths, right? Police, military, red team members, sometimes, depending upon what kind of pen testing you do. Security, private security, landlords, and recovery. All those people, under some circumstances, may need to know how to open a lock without the key. And they have a right to be, they have a certain amount of right to be protective of their trade secrets, just like anyone else would, really. If you make a living doing something and all of a sudden it isn't secret anymore, your value goes down in the marketplace. And those people have a certain right to be upset that we're teaching it as a game. I mean, really, you think about it. It makes a certain amount of sense. All these people, though, they have to remember one thing. They have the same problem that the burglars have. And it's why what we're learning how to do and what they need to know how to do is very different things. Picking's just too damn slow. If you're a locksmith, you're not going to get out a short hook. Most locksmiths don't even carry one. Many locksmiths don't even have one because it's just too slow. It's too slow to open a lock this way. It's a fun puzzle, but it's simply too slow. So they use other techniques. The probably the best one is the pick gun. A pick gun uses exactly the same theory as the bump key does. It uses spring tension to create chaos within the lock and move the pins in a chaotic manner. Is this doing it for you? Okay, good. I don't see the animations on the presenter view. So we've done basically exactly the same thing that you've done with a bump key, except we do not need the key, right? So even though it is not in the picture here, with a bump key, with a pick gun, you also use a tensioner. So we're putting tension on the lock using a tensioner, just like we would if we were single pin picking. And then click, 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 we create chaos inside the lock. If we have the right amount of tension and we keep our gun level so that it hits all the pins at the same time, we should be able to move all of the binding pins above the shear line at the same instant. If our tension is right, the lock will open. It is a very effective way to open simple pin tumbler locks. Another much more common methodology for especially on the locksmith side of things and also people who like RID team members and stuff who may want to get into an electrical cabinet or something is raking. Raking uses, once again, same basic theory as a bump key or a pick gun. It is creating chaos within the lock. And you put tension on lock, and you use your rake, you insert the rake in the lock, and then you do your best imitation of a caffeinated squirrel. And the resultant motion inside the lock, once again, creates chaos inside the lock. If we get lucky, all of the pins move above the shear line at the same instant, and the lock comes open. By far a much faster way to open a lock. But is there any sport in it? Not really. Not really, because even though there's much more technique to raking than there is to any other method I've brought up thus far, except for the single pin picking at the beginning, it's still really just kind of screwing around. You know what I mean? So, for the security professionals, it's not an art form. It's a duty. It's something they need to get done quickly. I mean, you think about it, if you're a locksmith and you're making $65 a lockout, are you going to spend 35 minutes trying to pick the front door? Or are you going to get out a pick gun and open it in 30 seconds? You know? It's not a study for these people. It's something they must do to do something else. In the realm of lock sport, we're learning about the locks. It is a game. We are trying to figure out what's going on inside the lock by using a pick. The final group of people, and fortunately, I have to say, the vast majority of people are the cool kids. Those are the cool kids. Those are the kids who get it, who look and go, oh, yeah, dude, it's like doing a Rubik's Cube in the dark, man. This is rad. And they see the fun in it. They see the entertainment value. They see the puzzle factor. I mean, you could sit and do Sudoku. So yeah, you know what I mean. That's damn number puzzle games I never can do. I have to count my fingers and stuff. Or you can sit and figure out a lock. And it has all of the things that geeks like. You get cool tools. You can learn how to make your own tools. You can make your tools better than the next guy's tools, and you can brag about them. You can get to know locks. You can get better locks. You can carry a lock around. You can show people how neat you are because you have a lock in your pocket, and you can open it using a piece of metal. It's just, it's got all the makings of a hobby that people of this ilk will find interesting. So how are we not teaching the next level of burglars? Because we are purposefully learning about the inside of a lock the hard way. Purposefully doing it the hard way. I equate this to bow hunting. okay? I don't know if any people are hunters, I am not, but people who go deer hunting with a bow, they are doing that because they enjoy something about the outdoorsmanship of it. That is not the most effective way to kill a 550-pound animal that could run over you, okay? It just isn't. That's what guns are for. But people use bows because it is more of a challenge, it is more interesting, it is funner for them. That is the same thing as happens in lock sport. We are using a single pin, a hook, and a tensioner to open the lock that we know we can open much more effective ways because it's interesting. Another thing is very few lock sport people train on mounted locks. And there's a good reason for that. Training on mounted locks is a huge pain in the rear. For one thing, carrying a mounted lock is very hard because you have to have something to mount it to. For another thing, it requires it takes a lot of the fun out of the picking because you have to put significantly more tension on the lock to open it, which makes actually learning what's going on inside the lock much harder. So lock sport people aren't generally training on mounted locks. Those who train on mounted locks will normally train using a crowbar, which is not the same thing as a hook pick. Question? Thought? Comment? Yes, that's exactly right. You will bend things if you work with a mounted lock. That is indeed the case. Lock sport people are hobby pickers. They are people who are doing this because it is an interesting hobby. Just like people collect guns because it is an interesting hobby. They have no interest in mounting World War III with the neighbors across the street. They think guns are neat, and they collect them because they're neat. We pick locks because they're neat, not because we're planning on breaking into anything, for all the reasons that I've given you up to now. And this is actually my group. This is actually my group in my living room. See the back of my house? See the glass in the back of the house? That's what I'm talking about. Nobody's going to try to pick my front door lock. And the entire slope behind my house is made of big pieces of limestone, too. So you can just go out back, get a piece of limestone, throw it through my back window. There you go. Please don't do that, by the way. There's a huge community around lock sport. I was shocked. Lock sport International has 146 members. It was up over 300 before it kind of had a downslide when the previous president kind of got busy with life and the organization kind of fell apart a little bit. But Doug's bringing it back really fast. We've got 9 chapters, 146 members, and most of the people are going to the meetings. And then outside of Lock sport International, there's a lot of other groups, including the Cleveland group here. You guys are fools, right?
Tool.
You're a tool, okay. But there's many. There's Tool, and there's Schuyler Towns' new group, Open Lock Sport, which isn't really going to be a gathering focus. It's going to be more of a informational sales kind of thing, but still. There's a lot of independent groups that get together just to pick, just for fun. Keeppicking.com has 2,258 members. It's the oldest, probably, forum out there for the internet. It has been, if I remember correctly, it was started before there was a web. It was actually a Gopher or a BBS. And was moved to a forum eventually. And of course, Lockpicking 101, which I'm wearing their t-shirt today, it has 54,228 members. And in all honesty, 17,000 of them have the magic 3-month, they've posted within the last 3 months thing. So it's a very active membership. And these are all people who are talking about hobby lockpicking. There you go. Open Lock Sport, how many people here know Schuyler Town? Oh, you're kidding me. Dude, I have to get him to come out here. Anyway, he is probably, if not the best, in the top 5 best lock pickers in the United States. At one point, he was the best lock picker in the United States. He won the big thing and got sent to Norway or wherever they do the international competition, and it was really cool. He wanted to start a company around teaching people lock sport, and he used Kickstarter and tried to raise $7,500, I think, to start building picks. Got 1,159 backers and raised over $87,000 in his 50 days that he left it up there, 1,456% of his goal. And that's a very small community of people who are mostly interested in art and movies and books and things of that nature. These aren't security people. These are normal Joes who came out in droves to support this. Lock Sport International is was spawned in spring of 2005. With Josh Nekrup, who is the original president, started it. Based it off Tool Europe, the German version of Tool. Just basically an organization with a little bit of structure around it to get people together to learn how to pick locks, then do competing throughout the regional competition, the regional conferences like this, security conferences, and then eventually move up to doing competitions at HOPE and DEF CON, and then can go and join the big boys in Europe and compete there as we went going along. Generally, it was felt that it'd be easier and more effective for people to start local lockpicking group if there was some kind of a groundwork laid for them. And that's what Locksport International and Tool are all about, is laying that kind of groundwork. As an organization, kind of got some of the core things that you might not be able to get easy access to, like a key cutting machine to make keys. They would get bulk buys on picks and stuff like that, so that they, and then of course set up things like Deviant Ohm's training slides, of which I've used quite a few here, to make it easier to teach people, to make this forbidden knowledge no longer forbidden, and also get people a really cool hobby if they're interested in it. We do have rules in LI, for whatever they're worth. Once again, this goes back to carrying a gun in a bar. If you teach somebody to pick a lock and they were going to break into somebody's house anyway, there's no amount of rules that's going to change their mind. But the general thing, the mantra that we repeat over and over again is you may only pick locks that you own or those that you have explicitly been given permission by their verified owner to pick. I get called once a week by friends of mine saying, hey, my buddy got locked out of his apartment. Can you come open the door so we can get his keys? Sorry. And my excuse is that, I mean, it's a better lock than I can pick, is usually the excuse, and the excuse I recommend to all of you, too. You never know if his girlfriend kicked him out, and he's going to go in there and steal her air supply CD, okay? So don't fall into that trap. It's hobby picking. If it's mounted, don't pick it. It's just not worth it. Also, it's really easy to break locks. So we do have some other core things. Abiding by local laws is a biggie. There are states, and I know some of you people are from out of state, there are states where it is illegal to possess, even possess lockpicks. Ohio, fortunately, is not yet, anyway, one of those states. There are states that do it, so if you, like me, carry your picks with you, make sure when you travel, you check before you go, because the last thing you need to do is get picked up for jaywalking and end up in jail, because you're carrying picks, because it's a level four, fourth degree felony in a lot of places. Go.
Keep in mind, anywhere in the U.S., it is only an offense to carry lockpicks if you commit a crime with the lockpicks.
That isn't true in Maine.
Really?
In Maine, you have to have a certified, you have to be having a LOA card in Maine. I know that for a fact.
And a LOA card?
You have to be a certified locksmith to own picks.
Well, that's not necessarily a LOA card.
Okay. You have to be a certified locksmith. Maybe you have to be certified with the state. You have to be able to prove you're a locksmith. And we attempt to get kind of, not buy it, but Locksport International, we actually have membership cards, like actual regular PVC, I'll show you upstairs if you want to see it, regular PVC cards with a barcode and the whole bit, so.
If you have lockpicks on you, and you are caught breaking and entering,
yes.
That is burglary.
Absolutely it is, yes. What I tell people is, if like I said, many Columbus police officers and state highway patrolmen are members of LI, and okay, they say, you know, we can't, if we stop your car for speeding, we can't do anything about the burglary tools. If you're standing in front of a 7-Eleven at midnight wearing a hoodie, different story. So why are we around? Well, ostensibly, we're all about competition, and we do quite a bit of that. This is some stuff that's happened at DEF CON. We've done some really neat things as Skylar and Doug Farr competing in Lockpick Wizard, where you're blindfolded. Pretty cool stuff. But realistically, we also have a good time with friends. Something to get together and do that's totally different while you're watching a movie, you know? Something other than playing freaking video games all the time or whatever. We do security research. I mean, especially Tool. It comes up with a lot of new stuff. And we also, this is my big thing, is to show people how insecure they really are, how the locks that they have don't necessarily do the things that they think they do. So is Locksport a sport? It's kind of up to you. Kind of up to you to decide, for you, who you are, what group you fall into of those four groups, whether it makes sense. I think that it's the competitive angle, honestly, it's never really interested me that much because, to be perfectly frank, I'm not the world's fastest lock picker, but I have a great time with it. It's a wonderful trivia contest for me to know stuff. It's neat. Is it a sport? After all this, I'm still not really certain. But I'd love to hear what you think. Here's me, all my contact information. If you want to get in touch with me, you can use any of those methods. They all work just fine. I do randomly blather about things on Twitter that are related to lock sport occasionally, and sometimes I'm amusing. And if you want to grab me, I can toss you one of my cards, too. So I'd like to hear from you. I did put something in my notes. I'll be up at the Lock Sport Village for maybe the next hour or two. Unfortunately, I have to head back home after that. I'm not going to stick around. I was supposed to be here all day yesterday and go up to Buffalo and visit family and do all this other stuff, but something got screwed up. So I've only got a couple hours, unfortunately. But I'd love to talk to all of you, hear what you think. Yeah, come chat. I'll teach you how to pick if you don't know. I'm sure there's plenty of people here who will teach you also, but I'll be glad to, or show you what I know. And that's it. Thank you very much. Thanks for everybody for coming, and I'll see you up in the village.